please state present and approve when I call your name, indicating approval of holding this meeting electronically. Chair Smith, Vice Chair Stevenson, Commissioner Harwell,
present and approve.
Commissioner Doors.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Stevenson, the first item we need is approval of the minutes.
Excuse me, motion to approve those?
Second. Oh, our motion. got a motion. I was going to motion in second. It's long. I'm awake.
Is there a second? Can I second?
You can second.
Yeah, I'll second. Okay, let's have a roll call vote.
Chair Smith, Vice Chair Stevenson,
approve.
Commissioner Harwell,
approve.
And Commissioner Doors.
Only two people.
Commissioner Doors, he checked in when we did the quorum, right?
Yes, he did.
Yes.
No, he did not.
He did not.
Mm-hmm. He's showing he's still online.
Yeah, he's on.
He's probably
in
three of the four.
He may be on. John was on earlier.
He's on mute. Yes, so he's sir. All right. Yes, give us a thumbs up.
All right.
All right. So, Commissioner George, you were here when we called the meeting to order and you approved the minutes, correct?
Correct.
All right. Commissioner Stevenson, anything for the Vice Chair's report?
I do not have a Vice Chair's report.
Okay. All right. Then we're going to go right into approval items, and I would like to turn it over to Gail LaRoche to discuss the personnel management plan.
All right. Good morning, Commissioners. We have one item up for approval before the committee today, and that is the personnel management plan, or the PMP, as I'll be referring to it. Before I present on the PMP, I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce Mr. Keith Frazier. He is a shareholder at Ogletree Deacons, and he's our outside counsel for MNAA Human Resources. He provided guidance and review for the PMP and for our HR policy and process manual, and he's online with us here if we need him. The PMP was first adopted by the Board of Commissioners on October 5th, 1984, so quite a long time ago. Over the years, the PMP has been amended several times, and it was last updated on August 17, 2016, and signed by then Board Chair Joslin. As it's been over 4 years since the document's been updated, we determined that it would be a good time to do it now, and we did. And the document was reviewed by our outside counsel, Keith Frazier, our in-house counsel, Carrie Logan, and the HR team. The updates include the recent Supreme Court's ruling that added sexual preference and gender identity as an EEO category. We updated the Americans with Disabilities Act to track more closely with the language used in that act, and also modified the unacceptable conduct section to address the unauthorized carrying or possession of firearms on campus with a referral to the Tennessee Guns and Trunk Law. We also removed the process of our president and CEO's involvement in some of the daily administration of the PMP, things like making probationary period decisions or temporary work assignments. These are things that, you know, managers and supervisors should be handling. The probationary period section was modified to specifically include the review of all employee terminations, whether they are probationary or non-probationary, by HR and legal counsel, just a good practice. The last significant change is in the due process section, and this is how the employee termination post-deprivation process is managed. And this is the process that takes place after the employee has appealed the decision made in the post-deprivation procedure, and the employee does not agree with that decision. So the former post-deprivation language process had the second step, with the appeal being conducted by a choice, either the board or by an administrative law judge. And so we removed the board's involvement in that process and replaced it with the administrative law judge only. This is done to protect the board and also to provide an objective third party in the procedure. In these instances, legal counsel will be responsible for the management of the process and will and the distribution of the report that issues from the ALJ and such portions of the record that the members of the board would want to review. Are there any questions?
I do have a question. This may be a question for Keith. Hello, Keith. Good to see you again. Is there any, I'm not sure the concern is right word, but can we change the language from sexual preference to sexual orientation throughout the document in line with EEOC and other federal language? Sexual orientation is what I am used to in my practice using. Is there any reason that we could not change that?
That would be wrong. I think that would be a good change.
And then I had one more question. In section 3.33, it talks about probationary employees. There is language related to those individuals not having due process. I'm assuming that means the due process is set forth in section 7, related to not having to go through the same steps or having the right to the same steps of review as other employees. But is that correct?
That is correct.
Hey, this is Trey. I just want to say hello and thank you. I have one of the same questions that Joycelyn had, so I've got a question, but thank you for your help with this.
So, Vice Chair Stevenson, I think we're looking for, if there's no other discussion, a motion to approve this with your caveat to change the word sexual preference to sexual orientation per outside counsel.
Correct. So I didn't entertain the motion to say that.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, let's have a voice vote. Roll call vote.
Chair Smith. Vice Chair Stevenson.
Approved.
Commissioner Harwell.
Approved.
Commissioner Dorsch.
Approved.
Okay, and I just wanted to thank commissioners and Dale for the work on the P&P, as well as Keith. As commissioners are aware, when we when I took office, you know, we had 94% of our policies and procedures were greater than 10 years old. So we have been on a concerted effort the last 3 years to update this. This one was 4 years and some change. So this has taken a lot of work by Gail, Carrie, and Keith, and Board Council as well to look at this document. So we think this is a major accomplishment. I'm going to turn it over to Gail for a few more information items, and we'll talk about some other documents that we're updating. So Gail, back to you.
All right. So at this time, I would like to update the committee on this year's affirmative action plan. And I'm pleased to introduce Mr. Jay Patton, who is a shareholder at Ogletree Deacons and is a member of the firm's affirmative action OFCCP compliance practice group. And he will walk us through the results of the affirmative action plan. And we'll turn it over to Mr. Patton.
Thanks, Gail. Nice to meet everyone. This year, we prepared 3 AAPs. And we're gonna briefly cover those with you guys, tell you what the findings were, and then take any questions, of course. And when we think about AAPs, I like this little chart on the left of the circles, because I think it kind of puts it in perspective, because this is what you guys are thinking about, all these things together. You know, equal employment opportunities for the baseline. This is what we give to people through Title VII, our equal employment opportunity rules and practices we follow. Affirmative action is a component for government contractors. And then there's diversity inclusion, which is something over and above. And that's one of the things you guys look at and work on. And so think about these affirmative action plans intersecting with these other areas. And with that, we'll jump in. So we did 3 plans. The first plan is a minority and female plan in our AAP, or affirmative action program. And it's a program. It's an action-oriented program. It's not really a quote plan. We use that language sometimes. When we looked at the minorities and females, AAP, we looked at several benchmarks. One is the availability analysis, the review of representation in your current workforce as compared to the census area in which you operate, taking into account all that and looking at your availability. Another thing we did was look at compensation. And then we looked at 12 months of employment activity with respect to promotions, hiring, and terminations. So those are factors we'll go over and cover with the minority and female AAP. And then we also did two other AAPs, one for protected veterans. These are veterans who fall in one of four categories. And we'll look at how that looked, and that's really focused on kind of hiring and applicant flow. And then we'll also look at individuals with disabilities. These are people who self-identify, which is a hard thing to do, to get people to really do, and say, I have a disability. And we look at that with availability analysis in your current workforce to see what the representation level is for individuals with disability. So we'll jump into the minority and female and talk about the results now. If we can advance. Thank you. So, availability analysis. Like we talked about, this is how we look at your workforce and see how it stacks up in the census area and availability around you. And the great news is there were no placement goals for 2021. So in all the areas and all the job groups which are based on EO categories, you guys are in line with the representation in your local area, which is great news. This is a change for 2020 where there was a goal for females, craft worker designation or the craft worker EO category. But in this year, there are no goals and there's no under areas of underrepresentation or underutilization. So it's great news. The next area we looked at and want to talk about is compensation. When we looked at compensation, we saw some statistical indicators for females and blacks or African Americans. So we did this by EO category. EO categories are broad. One of the criticisms of the federal EEO-1 pay data collection that was done in 2017-2018 was it was done by EEO categories, which are very broad. And it's really hard to say that those categories show similarly situated employees. So on the broad compensation filter look, we found some areas that had some indicators. But then we went and looked a little deeper, and we looked by job title. And when we did an analysis by job title, so we took each job title, looked at everybody in it, looked to see if there were any issues as far as gender or race, ethnicity, and we saw none. So when you look at it that way, you do not see anything, which is good news. But, you know, I'm relatively new to working with you guys, but it seems like you're constantly looking at equity as far as pay and compensation. You have a system in place looking at new hires, how they come in, how they're filtered into the existing system. And, I keep doing all those things to make sure, that compensation stays in line. But at the job title level, there were no issues. So we can move on and talk about some more. We'll talk next about the personnel activity for the last 12 months. When we look at promotions, we saw nothing. No findings of anything, any statistically significant disparities for males, females, and our race ethnicity. So that's good news. Hiring, we did find an issue. There was statistically significant issue against males in the professional job group. And so that's an area we need to think about. We'll talk about some recommendations on that. And remember, this was a challenging year. So it could be that because of the way hiring activity proceeded in the first quarter or so, and then suddenly stopped, that could have impacted this and other things that we'll see, and a lot of these results, they're best looked as kind of as trends, but the hiring did show an issue, a finding, or disparity for males in the professional job groups. It's something to think about going forward. Terminations. We look at terminations by voluntary and involuntary. If you get a review from OCCP or any regulator, the real focus of those reviews are when you tell people to leave. Those are involuntary terminations. When we look at involuntary terminations, we saw no indicators on any basis. We looked at voluntary terminations, that could be retirements, taking another job. There were statistically significant findings for females and blacks or African Americans. we talked more about this, and I think Gail, and you know, the folks at the authority can explain what happened. And I think a lot of that is probably another 2020 thing, with people deciding it's probably, it may be, maybe I was thinking about staying longer, but decided to leave. And so there were more voluntary terminations tending towards females and African Americans, but involuntary was clean. So I think pretty good results on terminations as well. You can always keep looking at it and make sure there's nothing going on, but if people in an audit, we many times deal with this by just showing an email saying, thanks for the years here, and that resolves the question, because it shows it's voluntary and that's the end of the discussion. So these are the employment activity results in the minority theme over the last 12 months. So I think we can move on now, and we'll talk about the protected veterans and IWD results. So protected veterans, like I said before, can fit in one of four categories, such as recently separated veteran, veteran who left the service with a disability rating, campaign veterans, people who served in a campaign, received an award, or other combat type experience, and they become protected veterans. And it's important as a federal contractor, as a contractor with a contract of $150,000 or more, that you focus on protected veterans and do what is required under the law for them. And the big measure here is, what is the percent of hires of protected veterans? That's the real measure you look at. You put in place plans and policies to make sure that there are no obstacles to their advancement and to hiring, but the real measure is, what's the percent of hires? The 2020 goal was 5.7%. You guys established it, basically you just accepted what the federal government put out, which is what most people do, because otherwise you have to do a lot of work to figure out a goal. And you met that goal. You exceeded that goal. Your organization hired 6.8% protected veterans, which was 2 of 29 hires were protected veterans in 2020. So it's good results, good work. What I see in looking at the statistics is the authority is continuing to get protected veteran candidates, which gives you a chance to make hires. And this year you made the hires and you met the percentage. Now, so good news on that. Individuals with disability. The goal is to have 7% in each job group, basically EO category. That is extremely hard to meet, and almost no organizations that I work with meet that across the board. Almost all of them, they may meet in a small job group in a certain area where they just happen to have several people identify, but it's very difficult to meet that. And that's been shown by OSCCP changing the self-ID form as in an effort to drive more people or encourage more people to identify as having a disability. Because what we see is there is a reluctance, fear, I don't know what it is. It's not a fear like they're scared of you guys or anything, but people just don't ID as having a disability very much. We know there are more people in the workforce probably than identified. Taking all that together, you guys have goals in several job groups because you're below the 7%. It's not unusual, but it's always something we should work on and think about. And so I think it's a two-pronged approach. Trying to outreach to groups and individuals who have disabilities to encourage them to apply. And then once in the organization, always looking, especially with reasonable accommodations and other policies, to make sure there are no obstacles to advancement and or retention for individuals with disabilities. So those are the results. Let's talk a little bit about the recommendations in the final slide here. And then, of course, any questions. So going back to minority and female, placement goals, you don't have any. Great news. So you know what you have a diverse workforce, which is awesome. Hiring, recommend work to increase outreach to males for professional job group. You know, you can look more closely at the individual decisions in that job group. And it's possible to hire employees impacted this result, because it could stop things midstream and change results. But you can look at it. And you know, like I said before, these things often are better as trend analysis than instant, you know, results. So and just because you have an indicator doesn't mean you did anything wrong. It just says statistically there's something you should look at. Every decision may have legitimate, non-discriminatory reason behind it, and there'd be absolutely no issues. But it's something to look at. Terminations, continue to monitor your voluntary terminations for trends. You want to make sure there's nothing behind people voluntarily leaving, right? We talked about this, getting ready, Doug and Gay and everybody, and we think we're good, or my understanding of discussions were good, but that's something to look at. Make sure there's no trend there, make sure everything is above board, everything's good. Injuries, disabilities, you know, we've set the goals, keep trying to do the outreach. We want to make, you know, we want to encourage people to self-ID, but it's just, this is a tough nut to crack for many, for almost all employers. But we'll do anything, you know, continue to do things that will help in this effort and help with retention. And then where you met the goals, which is most areas, you know, like it says, continue to engage supportive activities to ensure a positive outcome. Keep doing the things you're doing, keep outreaching, and keep monitoring. And this consistent monitoring and focus by leadership, like you guys, is probably the most critical thing. If you set the right tone at the top, and you're looking at it constantly, you have a much better chance of having good results. So those are my recommendations. That's a review of the results. Please let me know of any questions or anything I can discuss that will help, you know, you guys understand this and incorporate your work going forward.
All right, thank you, Jay. And Chair Smith, Vice Chair Stevenson, any questions for the group? It's not a required approval item, but it is something we just wanted to update you on, that we've completed those three reviews of the plans.
No questions for me. Thank you for your work on this.
We're glad to help. We enjoy working with you guys this year, Lou.
Okay, thank you very much, Jay. Appreciate your time and effort on this, getting us all up to speed. It's been very helpful. I'll turn it back over to Gail for an update on the HR policy and a few others.
All right. The next information item is an update concerning our HR policy and process manual, which was last updated on October 26, 2011. And so it falls squarely into the category that our president CEO was just talking about, needs to be updated.
9 years, 4 months, 12 days.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that.
3,423 days. So we're now going to be current.
We will be current. And going forward, more importantly, we will be current. This document is in a draft state. Here's a quick look. We're branding all of our HR materials that are employee-facing this way. And just for a point of reference, this is what it used to look like. Kind of plain Jane. And so now we've got our brand, which is be valued, be fulfilled, and be informed. And we worked with a communications group to come up with that branding. And it fits with what we're doing organizational-wise. So the objectives in updating the manual were to ensure consistency with policies that have been developed over the years, and to reduce redundancy between the policies and the language in the manual, because trying to recreate the wheel in two different documents is problematic. We have incorporated references to many of our policies, well, all of them, that are appropriate to be referenced out, including a reference to the benefits summary, because prior to this, there was an attempt to kind of have all of our benefits information in this document. And as we know, we make plan changes every year, and so that's also not practical. And so we have a reference out to that. We've made any necessary updates to ensure that the manual is reflective of any current legislative changes, such as we've done with the PMP. And we've also incorporated the changes made to the PMP so that we have consistency between the two documents. The target date for the finalization of this document and publishing it to the employees is April 30th of this year. So that will be done by the end of next month. Any questions?
I've got a quick question just out of curiosity. How will this be distributed? Is it going to be distributed electronically, and how will it be acknowledged?
We have a learning management system that we use for acknowledgement of these types of materials, and each employee will get an email, and they'll be required to go in and acknowledge that they've received this document.
Okay.
And then
Thank
that
you.
Goes in the file.
Yeah.
How often will this be updated going forward?
We actually will be reviewing this on an annual basis just because laws change. You know, we want to make sure that things are current and stay current, not in this.
We took over in 17 and assessed where we were at on the policies. There's a CEO policy that says all documents should be updated every 3 years. So she's going to do an annual review, and we're trying to keep our documents signed and sealed and gone over at least every 3 years.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? All right. These are our workforce diversity slide with some statistics. And these are hiring statistics over the fiscal year time periods of 2019, 2020, and 21. And these are through January 31st of this year. So at a high level for males, we are above the 2019 American Community Survey Nashville MSA labor force benchmark. And we are about on par with the Davidson County labor force benchmark. For females, we're slightly below each of those benchmarks. For Black and American African category, we are below the 2019 Davidson County benchmark and slightly above the Nashville benchmark. And then the category of other is pretty much on trend with the benchmarks.
And I think this is probably some of the information that Jay was referencing on the males, because this has been, in the past, these charts have been a real focus of the commission. And so it's been a concerted effort to try to adjust the males and increase the females, and then to make sure that we're matching, you know, what goes on in our surrounding community. So those are intentional efforts on our part to try to make sure that we're, you know, in that ballpark. So I think it's a good news story for what we're trying to do.
For our current workforce against the benchmarks, for the male category, we are above the county and Nashville benchmarks. For females, we're below. And as Doug said, it's always a balancing act. For the Black or African American group, we're pretty well equal with the Nashville MSA and below the Davidson County benchmark. And then finally, for the other category, we are slightly below both benchmarks. Okay. Any questions on this slide?
I just have a quick question for Doug. I guess, have we diversified our searching efforts or how we search or put information out when we're looking for new people? Is that a part of the strategy in getting improvements and continuing to improve these numbers?
It is, and Commissioner Stevenson, you had one of the best suggestions a while back where we reached out to the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People HR area, so we have done that. And so I think Gail and I both understand that, and as we, you know, hire new staff to come in here to do that, we want to make sure that we're not, you know, just the big name search firms, you know, or just the big airport search firms that we're looking out. And so if there's other suggestions that commissioners just want to know, are we using this, you know, let us know what that is, but we are actively trying to expand the number of places we advertise opportunities here at the airport.
Yeah. We advertise in just about, I'm going to say, 80 or so different types of venues, and so we really, you know, are diversifying where we are, you know, searching for employees. And then also, as you know, as the pandemic wanes, we'll be doing more and more outreach events as well. We do them virtually now, and we've got a couple where we've gone in person, but it's been a lot less activity than, you know, than we would have normally. But we're gonna get back there. Okay. Any other questions? All right. So now we're going to move into the business diversity development update. And at this point, I'm happy to introduce Ms. Shanetta Griffin. She is a consultant who is filling in for our role of Assistant Vice President, Business Diversity Development, since the departure of Mr. Thomas, our former AVP of BDD. Ms. Griffin is a seasoned airport professional and a licensed engineer, which really helps us out because she can speak both languages, both, you know, in the engineering construction as well as BDD. She has deep expertise in many areas of the airport management field, including business diversity development. We're very fortunate to have her on board as we begin the process of hiring our next head of BDD. Okay, and so key BDD activities that are going on right now, we are working to finalize the disparity study as well as the federal DBE local SMWBE program goals. And I'll be talking about that a little bit coming up here. Outreach activities for fiscal year 21 have included 60 firms having been certified. 11 applications are currently in review, and that's always a fluxing number. And 238 certifications renewed as of February 28th of this year. And so a lot of activity going on in that area. This is our SMWBE spend slide. And as you can see, our last fiscal year has had the largest spend, you know, primarily due to our construction activities. We look to be trending in the same direction of spend for this fiscal year as reflected by the percentage of the expenditures information. And our total spend from fiscal year 2016 through fiscal year 21 is $231.6 million. And then you contrast that with the fiscal year 11 to 15 of $46.8 million. So a lot of activity, a lot of good energy out in the community.
Yeah, that's a big difference, and I use that when I go out into the community, that prior to being a vision, our five-year spend was about $50 million. And the first five years of being a vision is 240. We think it's going to go north of $300 million before we finish this up in 2023, and so, you know, you're quadrupling, you know, what we've been doing in the SMWBE field, so thank you for that, Gail.
Mm-hmm. All right, and the last item is an update on the disparity study. And so as a little bit of history, in 2007, we procured Griffin and Strong to conduct the study. They found that continuing the program was warranted. There were 5 findings and 9 recommendations. The program area expanded to 16 counties from 13 Tennessee counties. And this is a factor of where you have a majority of activity or contracts. And in 2017, Colette Holt and Associates did our study and found that the program had been successful in reducing barriers, but that a continued program was warranted or constitutionally supported because there was still discrimination in the Tennessee marketplace. And so here we had 2 findings and 14 recommendations. Based on the study, the program area expanded to the state of Tennessee. Currently, Griffin and Strong is conducting our study. They have submitted a final draft study that states the program is constitutionally supported, so we would go forward with that. We've got 4 findings, 5 recommendations, and our program area is still in a final analysis state. Okay. All right, and so we'll go to the next slide. And this is the timeline. Let's see. So we, in October of 2018, the contract was approved by the board for Griffin & Strong. From November 2018 to November of 2019, the firm completed the study. So they were doing all the data collection, all the analysis, all the things that go into producing this kind of a study. In December of 2019, Griffin and Strong submitted their first rough draft in its entirety. After thorough reviews and many, many, many meetings, in June of 2020, Griffin and Strong submitted a final draft study to the MNAA, as well as a draft of the federal and aspirational goals. In November of 2020, MNAA received the final draft executive summary. Our next steps, which will take place between now and next month, are to finalize the DBE, ACDBE, and aspirational goals, and to finalize our communication plan. In the May-June 2021 timeframe this year, we will submit the final study and goals to the Diversity and Workforce Development Committee, and then we will conduct our community outreach. The chair, of course, and members of the Workforce Diversity Committee will be invited to that outreach. And finally, we will submit the goals to the FAA. Our next study after that should be conducted in 2024 for the time period of July 2019 to June of 2024. And these studies can be conducted anytime between 3 to 5 years, but they do take, as you can see, a long time to do. And with that, any questions? And that would conclude my presentation.
Thank you, Gail. Chair Smith or Vice Chair Stevenson or committee members, any additional questions for the staff on the diversity workforce development? Okay, I'll turn it over to Chip.
I was gonna say, seeing none, I'll move to adjourn.
Okay.